In today's quest, the king is dead. Long live the queen. This is our first queen, and this is the quest for power. Welcome to the Quest for Power, where we are ranking and reviewing all of the European monarchs from the early Middle Ages to World War I. So welcome back to the Quest for Power. We are your fellow party members on a journey for historical knowledge. We are Scott and Michael. And today we will be reviewing one of the longer names, longer named monarchs, Amalasuntha.
Amalasuntha. Hey, at least it's not a Theo name, you know?
Yeah. No... I'm not going to forget this one. Amalasuntha. So a very distinct and much easier to pronounce name. So I'm excited. First queen. Yeah. We'll have to see if they're able to make their mark on history and be promoted to high queen. Yeah.
Yeah. Could have our first high queen. Yeah. That would, that'd be pretty cool. It's pretty hard in this time to be a queen. So, we'll have to see how that goes. If you, like what we do, like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram or email us at questforpowerpod@gmail.com. And with that nonsense out of the way, Scott, it's been a while because, I've been a little busy at the moment. What have you been up to?
Oh man, a lot of just like travel, preparing for travel, for work and for fun. But honestly, it's just been like kind of just like a big old like blur of like, yeah, I'm getting stuff, you know, getting some stuff done. And but I got to see the new D&D movie, so that was a fun one.
Yeah, you told me that was good. That was I'm actually very happy that that one was good.
Yeah, I went in fully expecting to just vomit, basically. Like, I thought it was going to be awful.
Yeah, I think a lot of people did.
Like, I really thought it would just be, like, generic Marvel film, but, like, with a D&D twist. Which, I guess it's not that far from the truth, but at least it's, like, I don't know, it's quirky enough to the subject matter that people who are like really into like Dungeons and Dragons, they'll appreciate the film, which is awesome for me. I'd be curious to see like what people who like don't interact with the game at all think about it, because it's like an enjoyable, I feel like it'd be enjoyable no matter what, but I feel like the real impact gets a little diminished from not having the knowledge.
I think the true test would be if my wife would watch it and if she would enjoy it, if it's a good movie, you know, outside of people who like D&D.
That's
fair. She's a harsher critic when it comes to movies, so that are weird like that. So
I feel like it is a fun love, like a fun loving quirky, albeit maybe a touch random adventure.
Yeah, those are always fun.
So like I feel like it's hard to just be like, this is an awful movie, but you know, I think that like a lot of the joys come from like the niche little things. You're like, oh, one of those chests is probably a mimic. Yeah. Like it's one of those things where it's like you as a player with metagame knowledge know this, but then people who are not familiar with the subject matter at all would just be probably just really kind of like, why? Yeah, why is that chest a monster? Or you just don't question it. You're like, this movie's just messed up. We're just, you know, we're just along for the ride.
Be curious. Yeah, I've been, I don't know if I'm going to get to a movie anytime soon since I brought my own prince into the world. So
that's right.
Been a little busy with that. It is amazing how time flies the minute you have a child. It goes from like, oh, I've got some pretty decent time. I mean, yeah, it's a little short. And then all of a sudden now 3 weeks went by and I'm back going to work. So it's just kind of crazy to me.
Yeah. I was just, also think it's like, is it really time flies or is it time goes slow?
No, it flew. I'm not ready to go back to work. It was a switch. I was full of anxiety before, and the minute like it happened, I've really enjoyed it
dad
ever
mode.
Since. Yeah, it was like instant switch to dad mode. I think, yeah, you saw in some of the stuff I've been sharing with our friends, some of the funny things that I've never laughed as much is because children are hilarious, and he hasn't even said anything yet. It's just been the faces he does.
Yeah, that's fair. And I'm sure as soon as words are going to be learned, going to be a
I'm going to have to figure out how to not swear as much around the house, because if he starts swearing, that is totally 100% on me. So it's partially why I kept the show explicit, not only because, you know, it's medieval stuff, we're talking about pretty horrific things, but also so that way if I slip and swear, I don't have to make the editor's job a living nightmare.
Yeah, we certainly would be challenged in that way. Plus, you can get out of your system and walk back into normal life nice and clean.
There you go. Yes, I can get purified. Well, since we've been getting that out of our system, we should get started with the episode. Before, we always start with sources, because they're important. We have the letters of Cassiodorus, who was Amalasuntha's chief minister and scribe. He also was pro-Roman, and he pushed those beliefs onto Amalasuntha. So there's going to be a very pro-Roman viewpoint in her story. We also have the histories of Procopius, and that is also from definitely the Roman point of view. And what's really cool with Procopius is, like the Vandal, during the Vandal fall, we got to see everything through the eyes of someone on the ground, which is really kind of cool. You don't normally get that. And not even the same like time, you know, not even the same time it's happening. No. He was there for these events, and it's the same thing. Not so much for her, but, you know, going forward, he'll be part of a lot of campaigning that happens between the Romans and the Ostrogoths. And then we also have Jordanes with his ever dubious lens on Gothic history. I don't think I've ever read anything that someone mentioned Jordanes and then not mention, oh, but he sucks as a source and don't trust it 100%. So poor Jordanes. Without further ado, bend the knee before her grace, Amalasuntha the Wise of House Amali, Queen of the Ostrogoths. She was born in Ravenna around 495, and it's pretty impressive that we know a woman's birth date, but I'm pretty confident that's because she is the daughter of Theodoric the Great, who was in power by then.
Yeah.
And so she is the eldest daughter, and who we went into great lengths about Theodoric the Great last episode, and a Frankish princess named Autofleda, who happened to be the sister of Clovis the First over in Frankland in modern day France. She was born into the Gothic royal house of Amali, if you couldn't tell by her title. And she was probably encouraged by her father. I don't know if you remember, her father couldn't read. He couldn't even sign his own signature, but he really promoted education. So he really probably pushed that on, her child. Like, I don't know, some people, like I know with me, I was pushed to, you know, college because, you know, my parents weren't exactly that way right out of high school. So, you know, you're kind of pushed out of that way to like make your life just a little bit better. And I bet that's what he did as well with her.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing also what the society she would, you know, be in, she would have to, you know, be able to mingle with the royal circles, especially because they had to deal with Rome quite a bit. She spoke Greek, Latin, and Gothic fluently. She then, of course, at the time, she was praised for having all the virtues of a Roman noblewoman, which were being patient and fertile, which is a nice way of saying she was submissive both in and outside the bedroom. And unfortunately, this is actually high praise at the time. They really would have put her on a pedestal for those kind of virtues. And I have a feeling that we're going to be talking about those kind of virtues when we discuss queens. It's either going to be that or they were very pious. There's not going to be, they're not going to talk someone in high, you know, raise them on a pedestal if they're, you know.
She really spoke her mind.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She spoke her mind and, oh, she was a warrior, you know. They're oh, not, yeah. They don't really like that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, I... different times.
Very different. At some point, she was married to Eutharic, who is said to be an Ostrogothic prince from Spain. So I didn't realize that there were some Ostrogoths over in that area. He is the great-great-grandson of our unfortunate king, Visigothic King Thorismund. If you don't remember anything about him, he was the non-entity that was assassinated by both his brothers, Theodoric II and the actual, like, good King Euric for the Visigoths.
That's right.
And so the two had children together. They had a son named Ethalaric and a daughter named Mataswintha. These names, they're eventually going to get easier. I had to imagine they breathed a big sigh of relief when Ethalaric was born, so that way they could continue, you know, the line for Theodoric. That would have been a little kind of nerve-wracking till that happened. Unfortunately, her husband Eutharic died early of unknown causes in their marriage in about 522 at the great old age of 42. His early demise is going to cause pretty big problems later on, as you can probably tell.
Yeah, the standalone
standalone mother queen regent. Yeah, not what they like. So, speaking of queen regent, when her father Theodoric passed away in 526, the crown passed to her son, who was still a child, and therefore she was raised a queen mother regent on behalf of her son. So her son still held essentially, quote unquote, all the power on the books, but really she is the one who's, you know, ruling the kingdom at this point.
Yeah, until he becomes of age.
Yeah, correct. And then he'll probably rip that right away and imprison her like all the sons love to do to their mothers. At least some of the stories that I've read. We'll know as we get later on. Also to the... So when she took over as queen regent, she also had to raise her son. So she had to be a mother and be queen to this nation. And she raised her son like a Roman, much to the irritation of the Gothic nobility. They obviously hated the Romans. They had been at war with Rome for a very long time. The two sides don't exactly get along together well. But she has support from Justinian, who, if you remember, supported Hilderic in the Vandals episodes. But also, like Hilderic, he really isn't being a friend to her just to be nice. Justinian has big ambitions for the Roman Empire over in the East. He wants to unite both the East and West, you know, and make Rome great once again.
to not mince words.
To not mince words. He wants to make Rome great again. And so he's waiting for any excuse to invade Italy and retake, you know, the city of Rome that is currently not under Roman control, which has to be quite embarrassing.
Yeah. Oh, and it's kind of a weird thing about, like, because a lot of the perspective that we have is such a retrospective look as far as, you know, your East and West Rome, whereas you know, prior it was you were viewed as Romans, and
correct
labels like Byzantine were things, labels that were applied afterwards.
So it's
kind of an odd thing of like, you know, to them it feels like that's territory that they still lost, but feels like in our modern mind's eye that it's, you know, it's Western Rome. That's to us in a modern sense, it feels like a separate entity. In reality, to the minds of the folks back then, it almost certainly wasn't.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why I am sorry if anyone is getting confused. When we are talking about Rome from now on, it is, unless I say Western Rome, it is essentially we're talking about Constantinople Rome or the Byzantines. It is, I call it Rome because that is what they, like you said, they call it. And like maybe the titles of podcasts will be Byzantine because, you know, that's how people will understand what it is. But really, that is Romans. And I had no idea of that. Like, I kind of knew that, but I didn't know like how deep that was until I started the podcast and started researching. Like, I thought it was two separate things because that's how we were taught.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's kind of it's kind of a crazy thing because you know about all these like wars and stuff to, or battles that were held to retake a lot of this, but it felt more like trying to, again, us looking backwards, hindsight being 2020, kind of like re-grasping and making like a final last like grasp.
Correct.
At the lost,
yeah, you're trying to relive territories. You're trying to relive your glory days when in reality they're just like, well, we lost a little bit of land.
This is our land. We're taking it back.
This is our land. Like that's, you know, this is our land. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just kind of one of those funny like history hindsights are different than how it plays out back then.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. We're going to have a lot of that. She was very aware of her unpopularity, and she showed no mercy to those who opposed her rule. Her father would have been proud. She ended up executing three Gothic nobles who were conspiring against her, and she at first banished them, and then it sounds like she went, now that I think of it, it's probably better if they're dead. So eventually she executed them. I wonder if it was that or if it was they tried to do something again and then she went, all righty, you know what, I'm done being nice, off with your head. Like most spoiled princes, back to Athalaric, he enjoyed excessive eating and drink, and this led to his death at an early age, in all likelihood because he had untreated diabetes, which is very interesting that
they, you know, if that was a commonly like, documented disease back then?
I don't know. And that I found that a couple of places. So I think that is just what their historians are reading between the lines, is that he had untreated diabetes based on his symptoms. Okay. But basically he ate himself and drank himself to death because he was a spoiled brat. He said so, you know.
It's like gout. It's the disease of kings, right?
Oh yeah, I've never heard of that before, but that makes sense.
Or they say it's brought on by eating a lot of red meat and drinking. So
yeah, I can see that. Yeah, peasants wouldn't have that. They eat greens. So yeah,
no. Wow. And there was I'm trying to think. There was a show that Matt Groening did, the Simpsons creator did, where I can't think of the name on Netflix, but where that was like one of their jokes where he's like, oh, you don't have gout, how real of a king are you if you don't have gout.
That's funny. I like that one.
So diabetes in that similar realm, I guess, although that's a little bit more of a hereditary thing as factor as well.
Yes, correct. Yeah, it could, but it could be type 1 or it could have been type 2, but I don't know
how you can diagnose that historically.
Yeah, I don't know how you can possibly diagnose that at all, but yeah, it's what they said, so it's what I'm going with. He must have been dying or showing signs of sickness because Amalasuntha, before he died, created this thing called a consortium regini, which basically allowed her to continue ruling as queen and still present a facade that honored the misogynistic Gothic tradition. And the reason she did this is, after her, you know, she needs to make it look like there's a king. And you'll see after her son dies, she's going to put something because, like, even, I mean, this is maybe pandering, but there's a great quote in Take a Shot for anyone who plays the game of when I say Game of Thrones, of Rhaenys and Game of Thrones House of Dragon that perfectly applies to the situation. She says, quote, "Men would rather put the realm to the torch than see a woman ascend the Iron Throne." Unquote. I mean, that makes sense. That happened quite a bit.
Yeah, people really do be petty like that.
Yeah. So after her son passed away, she appointed Theodahad as a co-ruler. And Theodahad, I think, is a relative of her. And the consortium Regini let her rule as a man in their relationship. And Theodahad took the place of the female consort. But the two ruled together. It's a kind of a weird concept. So that was it took me a little bit to understand that. I hope that was made clear of like kind of what's going on.
Yeah, it sounds like it's kind of a weird, like, I don't know, they let them do that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, yeah, they had a role flip here.
Yeah, that they must have allowed that in this society.
Be like, you're now the male consort.
I think it's because it's appease. Well, yeah, I think that would be on him, but I think it would appease the. I think it appeases the egos, essentially, is what it does. But right. I'm sure that doesn't go away. I'm pretty sure that's going to cause problems down the road.
Well, you know.
and this little arrangement, as some people to mistakenly, I see, believe that they were married. And this is complete nonsense. Just because they were king and queen, ironically, it's not because they were married. Because he already had a wife, and she was stated as always a widow. And by she, I mean Amalasuntha was always stated as a widow after her husband passed away. She never remarried. So, you know, just to kind of clear that up, because some people may think that. Her good relationship with Rome was not doing her any favors on top of her being a woman. There seems to be sources that say she was opening negotiations with Constantinople on handing the keys to the Gothic kingdom and herself over to Justinian.
Was she Catholic while she was at it? No, know, just to put that final nail in the coffin.
Yeah. No, she was, she's Arian. And at first, like, I agree with you. I dismiss this as at pure nonsense because, you know, I chalked it up to her being a woman and, you know, the sources just being petty about that, you know, the big evil bad queen giving up, you know, her power and
that's right,
the land, you know, to the big evil empire. But she kind of could have. Think about it. The nobility was against her. She probably had no trust of her co-ruler Theodahad. It's not the worst play. She already likes the Roman culture more than the Gothic one, and the Roman army is unstoppable at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely either that or you just run away. Yeah. You're just like, I'm just going to run to Rome at this point.
So yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I don't think she was, but I think that could have been a good play on her end, and it may have saved her life. Who knows?
Yeah. Let me grab my my Madden drawings here and start drawing all over the field. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, on whether you physically run to Rome and just abandon your queen post, or you just, you know, politically run to them.
Yeah,
would be interesting. Because you're not going to be able to talk your way out of it.
Yeah, correct. No. The minute that rumor is out there, she's done. Again, you don't watch the show Survivor, but the show Survivor in medieval times are so like with the alliances and breaking apart and going together again. If you are going to tell a lie to someone, it is much harder to get someone to believe someone else. Like, let's say, I'm gonna just
No, I get what you're saying. It once something's out there,
yeah,
it's you have
correct.
to work 10 times as hard to disprove a lie
Exactly, yeah.
than to
Even though you
actually
could be
just.
telling the truth, it doesn't matter. That person first got they got the first shot off. It's gonna be much harder to get them to believe you. And again, especially in this misogynistic society, she's already at a disadvantage. Hate to keep pounding that, but it's the truth. The nobility, believing that she was planning to hand over the kingdom, rose up in rebellion and imprisoned her on the island of Martana, or Isola Martana, and it's located in a landlocked lake just about northeast of Rome, if you're looking on a map in your head. This was done either by Theodahad orders or permission. He was a well-liked Gothic general, and the nobility didn't really like her at all to begin with. There's a lot of sources that say it's just the nobility, but he had to have some, he either knew about it or he had to have, had some part in it. There's no way he was not complicit in this little coup. It gave him sole control over the kingdom.
I think that's the other part is it's it that she's an easy scapegoat to just take sole ownership of a society.
And not long after she was in prison, she was found dead in her bath, showing signs of strangulation. The culprits were officially some relatives of men that she executed in 535.
Oh,
And
that'll do it.
but it was most likely Theodahad or Justinian who orchestrated her death. There's a lot of historians that it's a little bit of a battle that goes back and forth. So we're going to put these two men on trial since it's already a very short reign. Who do you think off the top of the hand did it? Would Justinian have done it, or do you think Theodahad would have done it?
I feel like this is Theodahad, right? I feel like Justinian feels like this has got to be like, small fry stuff for him at this point, right? Like she's already kind of out of the picture.
Yeah, I mean she is out of the picture already, but let's dive in this a little deeper. Let's examine why Theodahad would assassinate her. She was the threat, to his supreme rule, and she was technically still his co-ruler. And generally when we've been going through this podcast, co-rulers generally cannot live while the other survives. I mean, we had Attila and his brother, and that generally didn't go anywhere until Attila killed his brother. And then with Theodoric and Odoacer, the Theodoric's kingdom didn't really start until he killed Odoacer. So
Yeah,
that
I
would.
bet. I guess maybe they abide by laws more than I think they would. But it feels like if you're going to the trouble of imprisoning someone in a remote place, basically about as close to dead as they can realistically be, and it sounds like she didn't have that much political power or support that he probably could have just realistically ruled without her and.
Yeah, exactly. That is the rebuttal. Like, why would he need to? You hit it dead on the head. So,
Yeah, that's like how I feel about anyone. Like, why bother killing her at all? Like, she kind of got thrown as a political non-entity at this point.
And the only ally she has is Justinian, and he's not a very good ally if history shows itself. Like, look at what he did for Hilderic. He let him get imprisoned and then executed, and then went, "Oh, I'm trying to, avenge you." Yeah. Now let's go with Justinian. Justinian had, I said, huge ambitions to restore the Roman Empire to its former glory. And obviously, Rome and Italy are a big part of that. He was looking for any excuse to attack, and her death gave him justification to invade Italy. It's his MO. He, like with Hilderic, same thing. He waited till Hilderic, you know, was dethroned and then, you know, died. And then he really went full throttle to invade Africa against the Vandals. So like, he's already done this before and it's worked. And it would not be hard for Justinian and the, you know, the robust Roman Empire to have like a really good spy system and to like, you know, have a spy slip into her bathhouse and strangle her to death. And then, you know, just frame the three people who, the people who would have, you know, had a motive in her death. It's not like they had DNA back then.
Yeah.
So who do you think really was the real conspirator behind her death after those? I mean,
I guess, when you frame it that way, it does, you put Justinian in kind of more the more likely case, just because like sounds more like politically expedient.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead, and this is also because I know Theodahad's episode. I'm going to go ahead. I don't think Theodahad was that intelligent to, or at least that warlike-minded to pull that off. I'm starting...
Kill someone who's already in prison.
Yeah, I don't think that he would have done something like that. I think Justinian, though, who had all the cunning in the world and was, you know, really good at being an emperor, he would do it, and he had the military to back it up. What do you know, he can essentially do what he wants. Well, regardless, her death did give Justinian the green light to call on his trusted general Belisarius, who conquered the Vandals, to invade and retake Italy, and thus the Gothic Wars have begun. That is the tragic life of Amalthasuntha, our first queen. Are you ready to rate her?
Yeah, with what we got.
All right, so how long do you think her reign was?
All right, not looking at the numbers here. Feels like it wasn't that long, to be honest. But, oh, but like probably more. I don't know. Well, like probably like 15 years. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, around there. As Queen Mother Regent, she ruled from 526 to 534, so around 8 years.
Oh, I was optimistic. All right.
And after her son died, she ruled only 1 year.
Yeah.
Okay. Tells you a lot about that society.
What? Yeah, I was like, I'm like, it didn't feel like that long, but I'm like, I don't know. Well, the son lives, but yeah. It was kind of entirely predicated on her son's life.
Yes, exactly. That is the base of her power. When her son was alive, she wielded considerable power, and she was considered a wise, prudent ruler. A lot of sources praise her up and down for her rulership during the time that she was queen regent. Again, those sources are Roman. So we have that. The Roman sources also describe her as very masculine, and it's because she had an iron will and temperament. Basically, she did not get pushed around, even though in the beginning it said that she was submissive. It turns out, you know, when her husband died, that she decided that she was not going to be that anymore.
So by today's negative connotation terms, bossy.
Yeah, exactly.
She knew she had the power, and she knew how to use it.
Yeah, and she had considerable power considering she was a woman in a male-dominated warrior society, not just a male-dominated, like, you know,
crazy
fighting. Those are the big positives. Her negative, obviously, she fell from power the minute that she had to solely base, you know, on her own merits, that she was the daughter of Theodoric the Great, and she was imprisoned and eventually murdered. So you got kind of a mixed bag.
Yeah, but it's kind of one of those things, like, having, I guess, everything being predicated on her son, which is obviously a necessity.
Yeah. Which means she feels
like she can't get
well.
Very high marks. Yeah. I guess it's one of those things where it's like you give her like as high marks as you can, but
yeah.
Like at the end of the day, you did still get imprisoned and executed by somebody who was supposed one of those two people, but I'd say what those both of those people were supposed to be your political allies. So, yeah,
that is true.
Or it was a random murder, in which case your guards around you were lousy.
Well, she didn't get really
a revenge murder.
I was gonna say she didn't really get to choose her guards. That was, you know, her captors.
Yeah, well, she didn't even command enough respect to get good guards. You know, you gotta have good guards to keep them in and
yes,
know, the baddies out.
And it's true.
So all right, so trying to assign a number can't be like that high. I don't know, probably like a 4.
I'm gonna give her a 3. Yeah.
All right. Like, it's about as high a marks as I can give.
Yeah.
Which is to say, you did as good as you could.
Exactly.
But, like, things just don't pan out.
I admire her, you know? That was, she did what she could.
Exactly.
The one thing...
I think the 5 is, like, you did okay, and you kind of, like, held your ground-ish.
Yeah. Like, yeah,
this is your losing. I think 4 is as good as you're gonna get, but while still losing ground.
I think if she would have sold Rome out and then, like, you know, became high in Rome, the Ostrogothic kingdom out and then became like a high person in Rome society, I think is the only way I could see her really like making her power more. But
yeah, exactly.
I don't think she would have done that just solely based on honor. You know, that was the kingdom her father built. I highly doubt that she would just give that up.
Yeah. All kinds of people.
Yes. Infamy. I could not find an aggravating factor. The sources did not say anything bad about her.
She was a woman. That's about as infamous as you're gonna get in that time.
Yes, I'm gonna go 0.
Yeah, no, 0. That's easy.
Religious passion, like the rest of the Ostrogoths, she's Aryan, and the sources didn't say too much about religion in connection to her. I think she debated philosophy, but I don't know that there is nothing religious that I could find.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna have to go 0 solely based on scant sources.
0s all around.
Stability. When she was ruling, there was no like when her son was around, there were no invasions, rebellions, the kingdom was very stable. However, when her son died, she was overthrown by a rebellion of nobles and, you know, war kind of kicked off, but that's after her death.
Yeah, I'm willing to probably splurge on a 3 here.
Yep,
out of 5.
I was thinking the same thing because I'm gonna give her the benefit of the doubt, and I'm gonna really kind of focus it when she did have power. She did have stability. You know, she could.
Yeah, well, yeah, well, it's just kind of at the very end when her son died. That's kind of like when shit hit the fan, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. And because like it was if there's sources that are not saying much stuff for 8 years, that means it was boring. And maybe for us in history that's boring, but for people living at the time, I will take boring over.
Yeah.
You know.
I know, every day I'm like, you know, I'm kind of glad that I had a boring day.
Yeah. Yes. Royal demise. She can get some good remarks here. She died by being strangled to death in her bath, which sets off the Gothic Wars. And like Odoacer, it's kind of a classical ending that fits the tragic story very well. It fit like if you were to write the story as a tragedy, I don't know, that's kind of compelling that she is strangled to death and in, you know, when she was imprisoned and most vulnerable, and then sets off a war.
Yeah, I'm it feels like it's so there's just like a little something missing.
I agree.
For me, so 4 is my thought. But
yeah, I mean, first I was gonna say 5, but I agree. There's something missing.
Yeah, if you're talking about the drama, but it's pretty close.
Yeah. Legacy. Okay, so she's got a little bit in here. Her dynasty aspect. Her daughter Mata Swintha will marry a future Ostrogothic king, and after that, Germanus, who was a Roman general that happened to be the cousin of Emperor Justinian. So we will find about that future Ostrogothic king, you know, in the future, in a couple of episodes. I don't want to give it too much away.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were wondering while listening to her story that this could be made into a tragedy, you would be correct. The Italian playwright Carlo Goldoni, I really speak Italian well. Carlo, I am so, wow, I am bad. Carlo Goldini, first written play. This is his first written play. It was written about the tragic life and reign of Amala Swintha in 1733. So she was had to be pretty popular that, you know, this is the guy's first play is about her. And there had to be some knowledge about her then.
At least some. Although, I think it's one of those things where people will tend to grasp onto things that are relatively, you know, more or less significant. You know, I think of like the Battle of Thermopylae, right? As like yeah. a thing that like mm-hmm. we as a Western society really grapple onto when
yeah correct
it in the grand scheme of things, at least as I understood it, it's not really like the end all be all, right? Like
yeah, it was a significant blow, but I wouldn't say it was the
it definitely is like a very like romanticized I think that's part of it.
Think it's a very easy story to romanticize.
And yes. Oh, very.
That I think it was also, you know, as the telling, you know, the story kept being told throughout the years and stuff like that, you could add more and more fun stuff to it. Romanian poet George Cuspec wrote a poem called Regina Ostrogolitor, which essentially is Queen of the Ostrogoths. And it is essentially in Romanian, obviously, a poem which Amala Swintha is speaking to Theodahad just before he strangles her. So obviously it's a pretty inaccurate poem, but it was the rough translation I found online. It was really fun and dramatic. She calls him husband and father of her child, which is not at all what happened, but you know, she got something like that. And one of the kind of the weirdest things I ever saw is she had an asteroid named after her.
Wild.
In the dictionary of minor planet names, 650 Amala Swintha is a minor planet orbiting the sun that was discovered on October 4th, 1907.
A lot more of a legacy than I genuinely thought. Like, I really thought this would be like, yeah, like she's a queen, and then that's, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I got one more pop culture kind of reference, and again, this is all old stuff. I don't think anything modern is. I think there should be a modern adaptation somewhere. But in 1968, the quote-unquote hit Last Roman, and she was a main character played by Honor Blackman, and you may know her as Pussy Galore in James Bond Goldfinger. So all kind right. of funny how that comes around. According to the critics, the movie was, quote, naive, entertaining, but psychologically crude and too superficial.
All right.
It also slammed the movie for, quote, not even attempting to put it on a historic foundation. So,
I mean, you know. So yeah, it sounds about right.
I feel like we have to watch this if we do Patreon and put ourselves through that misery for our fans.
I mean, how bad can it be?
Yeah,
you know.
So she's got a little bit more, you know, she's got a bit more legacy to her. How much are you gonna give her for those?
You know, let's see. A 10? I feel like it's got to be like...
A 10? Like holy all crap.
That. No. I said out of 10.
Oh, out of 10. I was like, I thought you were going 10. Oh my goodness. I mean,
this has got to be like a... Like a 6. I feel like there's an awful lot of material for someone who, at least to me, doesn't seem like she was like all that, you know. But sometimes this is legacy, not was this person the best ruler.
Exactly. That's, yeah. Exactly. Yep.
Like, so I think if with this much like odd pop culture,
I mean,
being that. She served in the minds and hearts of artists on multiple occasions
in several different centuries.
Yeah, I mean, all the way up as recent as the 1960s, which is kind of crazy. Like, I mean, that's pretty darn recent.
The big thing for me is like what raised the legacy aspect for me is that she got an asteroid named after her. I thought that was
They'll name an asteroid or like, I mean, the same thing as like animal species. Because you have to think who are the people who name asteroids? A bunch of nerds. That's true. Who names asteroids and stuff. they're like we did nothing but study Latin to like name everything.
Yeah.
So,
and also to be honest, like future rulers that we do down the road who probably will score even less than her on the legacy aspect will have way more stuff. This is like I'm just scraping the bottom of the barrel to try and get everything out.
I mean, but that's kind of wild though that she's like
a
main character like in a 1960s film.
Yeah,
kind of interesting. Like I don't know like film history all that well, so like I don't know if like the 60s was just like the era of like super booming film and that like basically we were pumping out everything that we possibly could just pump out for the sake of, you know, doing it like the Atari time of the video games where
but
just made games on games.
She was played by a Bond girl, so she cast, you know, you have to be somewhat famous for that.
A little bit.
So how much are you gonna go for this?
I'm willing to give like a a 6. That sounds right.
I was gonna debate on 5.
It's tough.
Yeah. I'm gonna do 5. It's fun, but nothing compared to some of the people we have done before and we're gonna do after.
Yeah. So all right.
Alrighty.
We got all the numbers. They're all in a row. The math has been done. The die has been cast. So our total is a 17 and a 15. For 32
out of 100. Oof, that's pretty brutal. Do you have off the top of your head anything close around your little sheet there?
Because we've organized them so differently.
Oh, that's true.
I mean, I have like recent people, so to compare literally just about half the ranking that Theodoric was.
Yeah.
So you have that for a frame of reference.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're probably in like some of like the, you know, like Alaric the Second's actually, I think, scored higher, but like there's.
I bet she did better than some of the Vandal Kings we covered.
Yeah, but probably, yeah. Probably not by much, to be honest.
No. No, she didn't have, because the Vandal Kings, at least a lot of them had, they persecuted the Christians, so you got good religious passion for that. Good old fashioned.
Yeah, an awful lot of zeros.
All right, well, the score doesn't mean everything. Should she be crowned as High Queen, become a lady-in-waiting at court, or be burned at the stake?
That's a tough one. I'll be willing to give the lady in waiting. I think
I will too. I think she did as good as she could have.
Yeah, not with incompetent.
Not by a long shot. I think she just dealt not great hand.
Yeah, as it turns out, she was disadvantaged. The game was rigged from the start.
It really was. Well, with that, we're going to do a little program note. We will not be reviewing Ethelric because we covered what happened during his reign this episode. And essentially, he was a child throughout his reign, and his mother held it stable while he partied. So,
can't really... Burn him at the stake. Yeah. Done. Next.
There you go. Reviews. We have our first 5-star review on Podchaser, and as promised, we will read all 5-star reviews from Podchaser. JD48305 writes, "An excellent podcast. Love the changes to the scaling system. Only thing I would like to see is the older episode kings to be re-ranked."
I feel like that's going to be a conversation and a time all on its own. Time where you just sit down and you have to revisit them.
We would have to do
in rapid succession.
I mean, I'm going to be honest. We are going to constantly be changing what we think and how we rank people. Like, I think we gave some of the early Visigothic kings ridiculously high marks that we would never do, you know, down the road when we start getting to, when you start having a lot more sources and, you know, things like that. But maybe it's something we could do down the road. See what we got right, what we got wrong type episode. Could be fun.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, thank you, JD848. Wow. Thank you, JD48305, for your review. We appreciate it. That brings us to the tragic end in life and reign of Amalasuntha. Let us know what you thought of our first queen to be raided. Sorry she wasn't High Queen, but at least she got to be Lady in Waiting. Message us via Messenger on Facebook and Instagram at Quest for Power, or email us at questforpowerpod@gmail.com. If you would like to support what we do here, please leave a review or subscribe on whatever platform you use. As we demonstrated earlier, we will read every 5-star review posted to podchaser.com. Link is in the show notes. As always, thank you very much for spending your valuable time with us. Next episode, we are going to be reviewing one of the alleged conspirators for the murder of Amalasuntha, Theodahad, who now has sole rule over the Ostrogothic kingdom. Until next time, the queen is dead.
Long live the king!